It's really a privilege to be here this morning. Imagine some of us would rather not be here and wish the summer would continue on forever, but things don't work exactly the way we would like them to work. I wanted just to share a few thoughts with you, which I hope in one way or another could be helpful in dealing with the challenges that you people face, we all face on a daily basis. You know, imagine you're teaching your class. Let's call them all together in one level or another. Tinoika shel beis rabon. That's what they are, young children. Elio Anovi walks into the room and he says, Higi hazman, we've been waiting close to 2,000 years. The time has come to rebuild the Beis HaMikdosh. And I need your children to help me. That's a reasonable request, and certainly a very noble goal. And we would answer them, as Chazal tell us, Ein mevatlen tinoika shel beis rabon afilo lebinyan beis hamikdosh. Sorry, Rebbe Eliyahu. We're not allowed to be mevatl our tinoika shel beis rabon, even to help you rebuild the Beis HaMikdosh. And when you think about it, it almost doesn't make any sense. Elio Anovi comes. We're waiting so long. The Beis HaMikdosh will change the world. The world will come to recognize V'hoya Hashem le'melech al kol ha'oretz. This is the day we've been waiting for. This is the beginning of the unfolding of the final chapter of creation. What could be a greater accomplishment, a greater hashpah, a greater influence in the world than the Binyan Beis HaMikdosh? But we're in essence telling Eliyahu, sorry, we're engaged in something more important than that. We're educating the youth. And therefore, you'll have to wait either until they grow up or find some other people to help you. But Ein mevatlen tinoike shel beis rabon afilu lebinyan beis hamikdosh. So in a sense, what you people are doing is the most important endeavor in creation. And if we're not even mevatel the beis hamikdosh for it, it means that what you're doing has endless, infinite, short-term and long-term accomplishments that are far beyond anything that we can see and even anything that we can imagine. So we really should come back with a sense of privilege, a sense of being engaged in the most important work that could possibly exist in all of creation, even beyond the Binyan Beis HaMikdosh. A group of mechanchim, mechanchos, have unbelievable power. Sometimes we don't even realize the extent of our power. I brought here some of our publications, which I'm going to leave here for anyone who might want to refer to them or might want to find more. But there's a piece here that I see we translated many years ago from one Chaim Gino, who's a well-known author and mechanich. And he writes in the translation as follows. Concerning a teacher's influence in the class, I have come to the frightening conclusion that I am the decisive element in the classroom. It's my personal approach that creates the climate. It's my daily mood that makes the weather. As a teacher, I possess a tremendous power to make a child's life miserable or joyous. I can be a tool of torture, forgive me, or an instrument of inspiration. I can humiliate or humor, hurt or heal. In all situations, it is my response that decides whether a crisis will be escalated or de-escalated and a child humanized or dehumanized. That's really so true. And sometimes, you know, we get so caught up in the classroom, in the dynamics of the classroom, in the teaching, in everything, the responsibilities that are going on, and we forget about the extent of influence that we have in that classroom. And maybe even more significant, we forget about the long-term influence that we have on our students. And I think that if we look at the power that we have in the classroom, and with confidence of how much we can accomplish in this classroom, and the long-term effects of those efforts and those accomplishments, it gives us inspiration, it gives us rededication, it gives us the strength to persevere under difficult conditions. And I think you people probably know better than anyone else how difficult those conditions can sometimes be. The Novi Yeshaya is actually in the Haftarah of Parshas Bereishis, chastises the leaders of Klal Yisrael. And he calls them, he says to them, Chershim Shmo'u, deaf ones, you listen here. The Ivrim Habitu Lirois, and you blind people, take a look at this. And the psukim continue and unfold and tell us to whom he's talking. He's talking to Meshulam Avdi, Ke'evet Hashem, and the Mitzudas learn Sepshate. He's talking to the Shleimim, to the most perfect and developed people of his generation. Shleimim B'midos, he says. Shleimim in Avodas Hashem, the highest echelon of the Jewish society of his time. And he's calling them blind and deaf. And he's telling them, he's giving them the message. He says, Rois, Rabois, you saw many evils, you saw many problems, and you didn't do anything about it. And he chastises them. And then he says, Hashem chofetz laman tzidko yagdil Torah v'yadir. Hashem wants lahagdil Torah v'yadir. And the Mitzudas learns, Haloi iker chefetz Hashem bochem. This is what Hashem wants. This is your purpose here. This is your whole purpose in life, is to accomplish these goals. What in the world is this conversation all about? He calls them blind and deaf and tells them to listen and hear. He says they're the giants of the generation, perfect, perfection in their midas, in their deus, in their actions. And yet he accuses them of such a heinous crime. So many people are in need. The Klal Yisrael is suffering. They're drifting away. And what are you doing? Nothing about it. What? How could you call me Sholem? How could you call me so? I'm not doing anything about it. What about V'ahavtarecho Kamoicho? What about Hechech Duches Amisecho? What about Kiddush Hashem? What about Arvus? Not doing anything. How could you? I'm Sholem and Midas and everything, and yet I'm not doing anything about it? What's going on? Teretz is, they're blind and they're deaf. What does that mean? Avada, if it was possible, they would do everything they could. But they recognize the impossibility of this situation. These people are in such trouble. These people are so far gone. These people are similar to some of those kids in our classes that we're ready to give up on. Nothing you could do. Can't do anything about it. And yet he says, you're blind and you're deaf. You're not seeing the reality. What's going to make you see the reality? Hashem chofetz leman tzidkoi. Iker chefetz Hashem bochem. This is your tafkid. This is the tachlis. This is the reason you were put here. This is the reason you're in this class at this time on this day. To break through that seemingly impossible barrier. And it seems, excuse me, that the knowledge that you can do it makes it all possible. Now I know. This is my purpose. This is what I'm here for. If this is what I'm here for, all of a sudden I'm no longer blind and deaf. The impossible becomes possible. I want to suggest that we have the ability to make the impossible possible. Sometimes, and I'm sure we can all identify with this, we see situations which are beyond hope, literally beyond hope. This one will never win. This kid can never be. This can never happen. Thank you so much. And yet, with all that, if we know this is our purpose, and I would dare say it's not just our contractual obligation with our employer, but this is our purpose in creation. Iker chefetz Hashem bochem. This is my tachlis in the world. That's it? All of a sudden I become empowered. All of a sudden the impossible becomes possible. All of a sudden I can change what moments ago looked like a barrier that could never, never, never be broken through. And that's the power that you people have. Armed with the realization that this is my purpose. Armed with the realization that I chose to do this. I could have done many other things in life, but I chose this. This is not just my job. This is not just my profession. This is my calling, and this is my passion. And when I realize that, and I realize that this is the purpose that Hashem put me here, the impossible becomes possible. There are no barriers. There's nothing that can stand in our way. However, in order to do that, we need tools. It doesn't happen just by reading the psukim in Yeshaya. It doesn't even happen by internalizing those psukim alone. Because al piderech hateva, there are things that we have to be able to do in order to make this happen. I'd like to just outline just a few of them, and in the hope that they may be helpful for you. Number one, everyone knows that we need respect in the classroom. If the teacher is not respected, it doesn't work. What we respect, we consider important. When we respect, we're receptive to the message. But we forget. The Rambam in Hilchas Talmud Torah, in the fifth parak towards the end, says the following: Kishem shehatalmid chayov lechabedes orav. That goes for the Mora as well. Just as the student is mechuyev, obligated to respect the teacher, kach horav tzorich lechabedes hatalmid. So too the teacher, the Rebbe, must respect the student. Doesn't say chayev, but tzorich. I would say tzorich is, if you want to have a student, if you want them to learn, if you want to reach their neshoma, if you want to influence them with an influence that will remain and reverberate for generations, then it has to be through tzorich lechabe. They must feel respected. No one is suggesting that you stand up when they walk into the room. But by the way, I was told about a certain Menaheles in Los Angeles who they say turned around the school. What did she do? She had the first day of school out there in the schoolyard where they drop them off, big smile at each student, introducing them by their name to someone who's going to take them to the classroom, and the teacher sitting there, or maybe standing up for them in the classroom, and with a big smile, receiving each one by her name. They say, the school changed. I read something that there was a woman, a principal in an inner city school, maybe in the Bronx or someplace, that also, they say she turned the school around. The scores were off the charts compared to previous years and other schools. And all she did is every day stood outside in front of the school and greeted each student by their first name. Respect. Respect. Respect does so much. And I'd like to offer a little explanation of how respect could be so effective. You know, there's one commodity, there's one state of mind, there's one emotion that is universal and everybody wants more than anything else. Most people, when I ask it as a question, they say money, but no, it's happiness. Everybody wants happiness. Everybody wants to be happy. And yet we find that more money is definitely spent on pursuit of happiness in our society than anything else. And yet, it doesn't seem to be such a happy place if you look at all the rates, the statistics, and especially the rates mental health professionals can charge. And it's not a very happy place. How is it everyone's pursuing happiness, and the world doesn't seem to be such a happy place? And I'd like to suggest a very simple answer to this question. And that is, we don't know what it is. If we don't know what happiness is, we won't find it. We could trip on it and not even notice it. We are very fortunate. We have a Loshon HaKodesh, which is the Loshon of HaKodesh Baruch Hu, which is the Loshon of creation, and wherein different from every other language in the world, in the universe, is the three-letter root describes the essence of the meaning of the word. And every time that three-letter root appears, it implants into that word that specific meaning. David HaMelech said, Achash, should we say it in Elul, Achash sho'alti mi'eis Hashem oiso avakesh, shivti be'beis Hashem kol yemei chayai. He had one wish, to sit be'beis Hashem. What did he say about one who sits be'beis Hashem? Ashrei yoshvei be'secho. Happy is the one who sits be'beis Hashem. That was his goal, and that makes him happy. Osher, Aleph Shin Reish, is maybe the highest form of happiness. The Shoyrish Aleph Shin Reish seems to mean Yishur, validation. Happiness is about feeling good about yourself. If our students feel good about themselves, they're happy. Happy people learn. Happy people cooperate. Happy people are not running away. Happy people will do anything. And if you become the source of their happiness, you become the most significant person in their lives, and you will be able to influence them in so many real, difficult, lasting directions because of the fact that you are maybe the main provider of my happiness. Respect provides a lot of validation. When a student feels respected, you respect my time. That has to do with how much homework and how many assignments, how insensitive we are to other things that they may be doing. You respect my space. You know, you give me space. You respect my feelings. You respect my questions, my opinions. You can disagree. Disagreeing is even a sign of respect because I consider you and I, we can have a conversation, we can disagree. There's a certain element of respect, but not that. You know, there's a famous quote which scares the daylights out of me. Someone in Eretz Yisrael, somebody asked a question in a shir, and the Rebbe says, Ata afilu lo medaber shtuyot. You're not even speaking stupidity yet. This poor kid, I don't know where he got the strength. A few minutes later, he asks another question. And then he was answered, Achshav atah medaber shtuyot. Hey, you finally made it. Now you're talking stupid. That's not respect. Respect validates. When we validate our students, we make them feel good about themselves. When we make them feel good about themselves, they become truly happy. And I'll tell you a secret. Probably our biggest challenge today is all of the temptations that surround them. No, temptations don't surround us anymore. They're in the palm of our hands. They're with us 24/7. We've become addicted, not even to the temptation, just to the access to the temptation. And it's so powerful. It's so powerful. But if we make them feel good about themselves, they realize, this stuff doesn't make me feel good. In fact, I'll tell you something. There's an inverse relationship. You know, let's go back a moment. In our society, if you did ask people for a definition of happiness, they'll tell you happiness and pleasure, there's such an equation. There is a relationship, and it's inverse. The more outside pleasure, the less happiness. Why? Very simple. Because if happiness is about feeling good about myself, then the more I need to imbibe, other than a glass of water or something like that, but the more that I need to drink and to eat and to take in from the outside, and I become so dependent on that in order to get through the day, I'm sending myself a very clear message. I'm trash. I'm nothing. I don't feel good about myself. I need all of this to survive. So in reality, all of these pleasures are anti the happiness. And when we provide them a sense of true happiness, when we make them feel good about themselves, for who they are, and by the way, not necessarily for what they do, and that's oftentimes why they test us, because they wish to see if we have that respect for them because of who they are, are only what they do. You mean you can still treat me with respect and validate me as a human being even when I don't act appropriately or I don't act the way you want me to act? Ah, now I must really be stuffed. Now I can feel good about myself. Now you have truly validated me for whom I am. And now I can feel happy, and you have made me happy, and therefore your influence is untold. To take it one step further, for teachers, besides respect, there's another ingredient which can also be very, very helpful. And that is friendship and love. Friendship and love can penetrate the ultimate resistance. When Yaakov Avinu was aware that Esav was coming to greet him, and he was preparing for this encounter, he sends a delegation to Esav, sends him a couple of tzoinu boker, he gives him some gifts, and he sends him a little note. Im lo vangarti v'hoyli tzoinu boker, he's catching him up on the years that they missed out. And the Ralbag, in the Toelius, in Parshas Vayishlach, says as follows. You see from here how to melt the resistance of a mortal enemy. Show him friendship. Show him friendship. I sent you a couple of gifts. I was with love. I'm catching you up on my life. What? First of all, he didn't show him any great friendship. Sent him a couple of behemoths. He's scared. This guy's coming. Who knows what? Esav has a design to kill him. And he sends him a little note. Nothing personal. Nothing sensitive. Nothing touching. Number one. Number two, do you know what Esav's attitude toward Yaakov was? You stole from me the b'chira. You stole from me the brochas. You outsmarted me twice. I'm going to trust that you feel friendship and love towards me? This is just another trick to get me off your back so that I shouldn't destroy you. Esav, I know he says, and the hatred Esav had, Chazal say, that Esav's hatred created a choy kateva. Halochohi. Esav sein Yaakov, to this very day, we see it and we have seen it. And all of this could be melted by a questionable show of friendship. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. Esav couldn't be sure that it was because he felt he had a track record with Yaakov. But maybe he was sincere. Maybe he really loves me. Maybe he really feels warmth and friendship to me. That could be enough to melt the ultimate hatred. Well, I hope that in your classrooms you don't have any haters. But I do know that in our classrooms we have resistors. We have people that just don't seem to want to cooperate. We cannot seem to reach them. They're so far away. They're so distant. They put up such a barrier. Well, there is a way to breach that barrier. And that is with love and friendship. And especially when it comes from a teacher. When it comes from a parent, it's somewhat compromised because parents are genetically programmed. You know, like I hear from parents all the time, oh, I love my child, I just don't like him. Don't ever say that. But anyway, no one knows that you're getting paid to love your students. I don't know if that's in a contract, but I haven't seen it in a contract ever yet. Might not be a bad idea. But anyway, it's just because I appreciate you. I'm validating you. Love validates. Respect validates. Validation induces happiness. The source of one's happiness becomes the most influential person in that individual's life. So we have great opportunity, great power to be able to validate our students and to be able to really make them feel good about themselves, and therefore to be able to influence them in so many of life's important directions, despite a resistance which could maybe be even compared to the hatred and the opposition that Esav had for Yaakov. I'd like to just spend a few moments on another point. You know, I over the years coined a sort of a motto. It's not about preaching, you know, standing and preaching like this. Don't do it in the classroom, please. it's not even about teaching, and that it does say in the contract. It's about reaching. Our job, your job, our tafkid, Iker Chefetz Hashem Bochem, is to reach the hearts, the minds, and the neshomas of each and every one of our Talmidim and Talmidos. That's what it's all about. And sometimes we get very caught up in the teaching aspect. Well, some of us get caught up in the preaching, but that really never works. But in the teaching aspect, but we have to reach. How do we reach? Well, one way to reach people is through inspiration and passion. If we're not passionate about what we're teaching, we don't have much of a chance to reach anyone. If I'm excited, if they see how much I love it, if they see that this is so meaningful to me, if they feel that passion is palpable in the classroom, all of a sudden, a large percent, maybe the majority, maybe even a strong majority, are beginning to wake up. Interactive learning is the name of the game today. I understand that the universities are no longer building these large lecture halls where they lecture to 1,000 people at the same time. It's about workshops, it's about seminar rooms, it's about small interactive groups, because that's where learning is. I think Ben Franklin said it the best. He said, tell me I forget, show me I remember, involve me, I'll understand. And the simcha of learning comes from understanding. If I'm not involved, if I'm not engaged, if I don't really get it, if I don't have the opportunity to ask my questions, and if the teacher doesn't have the opportunity to crawl into my mind to see how I'm misunderstanding something and straighten it out, so I feel that sense of, oh, I got it. The educational process is not really happening. And this is not so easy, because no matter how homogeneous your classes are, everybody is an individual. When Moshe Rabbeinu was informed that he's going to pass on from the world, and he turns to Hashem to ask for a successor, and he has four items on his short list, the first thing he says, "Vayemer Moshe el Hashem, Yifkoid Hashem Elokei Horuchos L'chol Bosor, Ish Al Ho'edo." He says, Hashem, the God of all flesh, should appoint a leader. And Rashi's bothered by that. Elokei Horuchos, what's going on? So he says his tefillah went like this, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, you know that each and every member of Klal Yisrael is different. Appoint a leader, Sheyuchal Lizboel Kol Echod VeEchod Lefi Datoy, who can tolerate, it's a sevel, it's much easier to push everyone into the same mold, close your eyes and pretend that you're reaching them. But they're all different. Everybody is different. Everybody thinks different. Everybody sees different. Everybody understands differently. Everybody feels differently. Just like their faces don't look alike, so too their dais, their thinking, their minds, their hearts are different. And the first item on the short list of a leader, and not a leader for a classroom of 25 kids, and not a leader for a school of 2,000 or whatever it may be, but a leader for a Klal Yisrael of millions of nefoshos. The first requirement on the short list, to be able to deal with each one as an individual. Lizboil, it's a sevel, it's hard. It's not easy, nobody ever said this was easy. If you guys were looking for something easy, you wouldn't be here today. This is not what it is. But each one is an individual. And it's about reaching that individual. And therefore, my classroom has to be extremely interactive. And that interactivity has to carry on beyond the classroom. It's on the breaks. I don't want to take away your private time, but you know, each one to his own and her own understanding. But it's evening time. It's extra time. It's concern for a student who didn't show up. It's constantly following up on the things that bother them. It's private talking, conversation, consoling, uplifting, inspiring, caring, showing, and teaching, and reaching, and creeping into their minds to see how they saw it and straighten it out. And we find, it's amazing, sometimes if you straighten out the thinking of a student, that one effort can make a lifetime difference. all of a sudden they chap, hey, I look at things differently. Yeah, why do I look at, I look backwards. I'm always starting from the, I always see negative, I see upside down. Wow, I never know. And if we do it on an ongoing basis now, can't be done all the time because we have many students in the class, but there's so much that can be done in terms of an interactive relationship. Just like to leave you with one more thought, and that is that one of the pitfalls of chinuch is starting in the middle. You know what happens if you start in the middle of a pasuk? Eskol oyhavov ve'eskol harishoyim yashmid. You know what that pasuk says? All those that love Hashem and all the evil people will be destroyed. That's terrible. But if you start from the beginning, Shemer Hashem eskol oyhavov ve'eskol harishoyim yashmid. Can't start in the middle. Agav, you can't end too soon either. Eskol oyhavov ve'eskol Shemer Hashem eskol oyhavov ve'eskol harishoyim. Oh, we're all okay. No, you have to read the whole thing. You need the whole thing. You can't start in the middle. Sometimes today, we take basics for granted. And I'm not just talking about basics of reading skills and such things like that. I'm talking basics of what's this Yahadus all about? Where is it coming from? Like, why are we here? Hashem created the world. Very nice. Why? What's the point? What's the purpose? What's my role in this? Where does everything fit in? Give me context. I'll never forget, it was a young man who, we used to put on these outreach seminars, these Arachim seminars for not yet religious people. And there was a young man there, a young couple who was religious, but they had suffered a personal tragedy, and someone suggested they come for a little bit of chizuk. And at the end, at the symposium where all the participants speak, this man got up and said, I learned the finest yeshivas, and I learned this, and I told him everything he learned. He said, but I never had a context with which to appreciate Judaism. He says, now I have context. And it changed his life. What's it all about? What's the point? Yes, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this. Don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, do this. Why? What's the individual meaning? As the Sefer HaChinuch calls it, tam v'toyeles, reason and benefit. And what is the global picture? What is Hashem's agenda? What does He want from us? Why did He create this world in the first place? Why is there so much confusion in this world? If we do not give our students over the years, and I would say over the year, and each year over the year, context for the Yadus, then the level of understanding, appreciation, and commitment is minimized terribly, terribly. Because, yeah, very nice, this, this, that, the other, but what is it all about? And even on a very specific level, they have to understand benefits. And benefits in the next world are not exactly psychologically satisfying for a generation who is used to having their pleasures a minute ago. To wait a minute today, nobody has time. No, every year there's a new something, and now it's faster and faster and faster, and now, nobody has any patience. This is the generation you're teaching. So you tell, oh, you know, yes, after 120 years. I remember as a kid, my grandmother was burnt with a pressure cooker that exploded. She was laying in bed for many months, and she was really in terrible pain, and she was saying, oy in jener Welt ist ein sehr glücklich. In the next world, it's going to be such a happy place. And I remember as a kid thinking, for her, that makes sense. But to me, I don't want to wait till the next world. You know, I'm a young kid. I want it this world. The Ralbag tells us in the Te'elius and Parshas Lech Lecha that if you wish to influence a loved one, and based on what we've discussed, that's our students, to do something that's bizarre, bitzar umuzar, painful and strange. And a lot of the things we ask them to do are definitely painful. And some of them even seem a little strange to them, especially in the context of a world that may not be doing these things. Before you tell them what it is that you want them to do, tell them the benefits. And the cheshek, he says, for the benefits will mitigate the strangeness and the pain. You'll say, okay, very nice, but where do we learn it from? From Avram Avinu. Hashem did not tell Avram Avinu that the covenant that he's making with him, the bris, requires the use of a knife. First, he says, if you enter into this covenant with me, you're going to have generations come forth and you'll inherit Eretz Yisrael. And only then did he say there's an operation. And had he told him that there's an operation and only then told him the benefits, even before he does it, it wouldn't be the same thing. He first knew the benefits that mitigated the pain and the suffering and the strangeness. And even Avraham Avinu could have been affected by that. How much more so our students? So we have to give them this sense of benefit. This sense of, as the Chinuch calls it, tam v'to'elis. There's reasons for what we do. There's benefits for us in the here and now. And there's a global purpose. It's part of a broader context. There's a purpose to creation. There's a purpose for Matan Torah. There's a purpose for Klal Yisrael. We are all pieces of that purpose. And when we can develop that sense, I think that we certainly have a much better opportunity, and we'll certainly be much more successful in reaching the hearts, the minds, and the neshamas of our students. Just want to mention that I'm leaving here a number of publications that we publish that you might find useful in the classroom, out of the classroom, preparing yourselves, different things. They'll be available. They are available on our website. A few of them are available on Amazon as well. And also I left with Rabbi Fogel, I left some USBs, which we've produced recently this year, about a number of videos, professionally done, on different topics, on nevuas in the Torah, scientific information, and they've been used in a lot of classrooms. You have to look at them yourself, see if you're comfortable with it, having had great benefit to many, many students. So Hashem should help, Yirotzen Shetishra Shechina B'Masi Yadeichem, that this year and your future years in Chinuch, doing the work that, as we mentioned in the beginning, that even if Eliyahu Hanavi will walk into your classroom and say it's time now to rebuild the Beis HaMikdosh, you'll be doing something that seems to be so significant that you can't even mevatel for that. Hashem should help. You should have Hatzlocha. And we should all be zeicha to the Amech Kulam Tzadikim Le'olam Yerushu Oretz.